Welcome to a new episode of Catching Fire, How Teams Win. Today we have with us Rosemary Joshi. Rosemary is the head of Global Software Strategy, Innovation and Business Improvement at Continental, and she is located in Germany. Nice to meet you, Rosemary. Happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Mohammed. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you so much. Let's start right now with the big question. Let's go back in time and remember when you took your first leadership role. From your own point of view, what is one thing that you need to do with each team member that can build trust quickly between you and this team member, especially at the beginning?
So if I go down the memory lane, you know, when I actually first became a leader,
yes.
I always say the story, the first leadership experience that I had was when I was elected as a vice captain in my school days, you know, for the house. So it was even back then, you know, when I led a group of students. And, you know, connecting to the element of building trust, it happened so naturally because I never knew back then what was leadership. I had absolutely no idea what was leadership, what are the leadership skills that I need to develop, how can I build trust. It just happened so naturally.
Yes.
But then when I actually grew up then, you know, into a professional world and started leading a team, I also had a privilege because I became a leader from the team that I belonged to. So I established trust with my peers.
Yes.
And then, you know, I got promoted as a leader in the same team. And this was already, you know, set as a foundation for me. And, you know, I didn't have to do anything, you know, extraordinary to achieve or build trust. But this question, I would answer it, you know, in my later roles when I actually started leading leaders.
Yes.
That's when actually I think I even started institutionalizing it and think about, you know, yeah, how can I coach them? How can I mentor the leaders to establish, you know, trust? Because, you know, otherwise the years before it was just, you know, happening naturally to me. And then what I also said to those leaders were, you know, based on two success factors that I would say, which is important to build trust.
Yes.
One is having an open communication. It's really important that you are transparent, you are listening actively. You know, most often, you know, we listen to say, right? So it's really important that we, you know, actively listen to them and to give feedback and also to take feedback.
Yes.
So that's like one, you know, important element of building trust. The second one, I would say it's reliability. You know, how can we be authentic? You know, it's really important that we have integrity, we have consistency in what we're saying. And it's also important to give and take ownership. So to sum it up, like, you know, what would be the ways in which I can build trust would be open communication and reliability.
Yes.
And
yes, say, yes. Sorry,
please add on to it or
anybody. By the way, I totally feel what you say. The most important thing that I always stress on and I hope that we're aligned in this one, Rosemary, that these things doesn't come by themselves. So, for example, building trust with people, and for example, let us say authenticity, it's not something that comes naturally to all people. So one of the things that I always encourage the people to remember when they are listening to our episodes, for example, not only your episode here, but other episodes, is what you have to work on building these things step by step. So, for example, trust is being built by small, very small actions consistently taken over a longer period of time. And then you can build trust with someone. Because unfortunately, nowadays on social media, we hear a lot about these words, trust, authenticity, be authentic, all of this stuff. But at the end, a lot of people can sit and say, okay, but is this really true? As these things work, we are overloaded by these things, this is the first. And second, but they say, okay, good to build trust, but how? You understand
me? Understood. So, I mean, coming to that point also, like, how I build trust from, clear actions that I take, and especially at the beginning, right, of the team. What I did, I mean, which I didn't know that I was doing naturally, was I always made sure I had the first one-on-one meeting just with between me and, my reportee to understand their expectations. And expectations in the context, expectations of them about me as a leader, expectation of them about the organization, expectation of them about what is their career aspiration. I mean, what's their expectation on themselves, right? So all of these, expectations about, different dimensions is something that I really sit and invest. And I, I take notes on those discussions. So that's one action which I really found it useful because, there's no way to measure trust. Right? And it's difficult, whether the trust exists or not. And if you add these actions, you're at least, making clear that the expectations are clear, at least loud and clear. And I also do, an all-hands meeting or town hall meeting or even like Teams meeting with smaller group to share with them, what's my vision, what's the mission, and what are my expectations, right? Sometimes even I, I do share what are the principles on which, I would like to run this organization. So it's clear. And yeah, unless and until, someone starts to quest or not meet the expectations, the trust comes naturally, right? To start with. And then of course, there might be one or the other situations in which, it can happen that you're breaking the trust and then you try to rebuild the trust. But that would be at least, a couple of actions that I, do at the beginning.
I like, by the way, when you spoke right now and you said, for example, that trust is not something that you can measure, because it made me right now fly with my imagination to how many crucial and important things in our lives, and we are not able or capable of measuring them. But because we are not measuring them, we are not putting a huge weight on them. For example, commitment, okay? How much somebody is committed or disciplined. Okay, you cannot measure commitment of somebody or the discipline of somebody. Okay, and, but at the same time, we are trying all the time to put KPIs for everything in our lives. And I believe that this is one of the issues that we have. A lot of times, the things which are non-tangible or the things that you cannot measure can be far more important than other things. I'm not saying that the other things are not important, but they can be also as equivalent or, for example, sometimes even far important. And we have to focus on both. But speaking about trust, I want to push you to speak about this story because you said it in one of our discussions before, and it's good to mention it here. When you were telling me that, and this, by the way, to anybody who's listening, this was not in preparation to our discussion. This was just a chit-chat between me and Rosemary. She was telling me that she almost knows a lot of things and details about the people who are reporting to her direct reports.
Absolutely. So... yeah, it's really important, right? I mean, not that...
Because this is a way of building trust.
Exactly. And, I mean, it can be perceived also in a different angle, which I would come to in a minute. But for me, when I was leading a large organization of 200 engineers, all together in the organization, and my direct reportees were limited to, 12 to 14. And then I'm actually having a disconnect of the rest of the, people in the organization. And it was really important that, I find ways to connect with them. It could be over a coffee. It could be, I'm walking by for a lunch and, they're just coming back from lunch. And then, I just, take a minute to talk to them. And that gives me really a lot of information what's happening on the floor, right? And sometimes, especially when you are building new organization, the leaders, try to filter some information, not intentionally, right? Some leaders would do it also for the good of their own employees. But, me as a leader, I'm not too judgmental on things, For me, it's just like, understand what's the problem. Let's, let's find a solution together. And this, as you mentioned clearly, this also gave me a trust for the entire people I was leading. I mean, the trust was, across. I mean, they believed in me, I believed in them. So there was this mutual, we were building trust over the period of time that we worked together. So that, that was important.
This is why I think this is one of the reasons why one of your former colleagues said about you, and I quote him in this. He said, "I found working with Rosemary very motivating and inspiring. This is because not only does she allow good communication flow, but also encourages ideas and innovations in the team." So I think this is a first of all, I think this is a byproduct of the trust that you are building with the people. This one part. And the second thing that I want to ask, or the thing that I want to ask here is, what can you share with us how you encourage communication flow so that people become more innovative?
And this is actually a statement from one of the architects that worked in the group where I was leading. I mean, back then I was leading a group of architects and technical experts.
Yes.
And, you know, to give a context in the situation that we're working, that was a time in which the vehicle architecture was changing significantly. There was a significant change in the vehicle architecture.
Yeah.
And no single architect had the answer to all the questions. You know, so they were like, you know, okay, so many things I have to learn, and, you know, they had to find innovative solutions together. And there was definitely a need for collaboration coming by default.
Yes.
And what I, as a leader, did was to just facilitate it, you know, and to create an environment that was inclusive and supportive. You know, this is what I, you know, did as a leader, just to step in at that time and make sure that, you know, I'm giving them the space to collaborate. And it's not precisely, I mean, it's not necessarily that you, it's just on an idea, right? It could be sharing perspectives and feedback, right?
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, especially when you are technically very strong, I mean, when you really have technical experts, you know, they're not the best in terms of soft skills, right? So, I mean, before you even start your second statement, your idea or perspective is being judged.
Trust me about this topic. When I work with head engineers and directors of engineering, okay, one of the things that I always tell them, we need to make you speak sales. Direct, okay? Because one of the things that I used to see directly when I'm working with them is, what they are very good at what they are doing. They know exactly what they are talking about, but they are speaking in the terms as if they are explaining to another engineer sitting with them.
Exactly.
But when you are trying to sell to the layperson or somebody, let's say in the sales or in the marketing, okay, you have to change your style. Change how you speak, make it shorter and get to the point, instead of, for example, of giving these huge details, in order that the other person is aligned with you, and then you can have a good chance of getting the buy-in, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So, I mean, for me, it was like, you know, giving that space for them to, you know, complete that three sentences, you know, that they have, you know, not to judge them immediately on the second sentence, even before they start. And that's what I did. You know, that's something I really invested in, making sure that, you know, there is that communication flow established between them. And I can probably also tell you a story more in the context of my role as a global head of innovation.
Yes.
And this is precisely coming, you know, hitting on the nail, the topic of innovation.
Yes.
I do brainstorming sessions and ideation workshops, you know, where people come together, you know, to generate ideas. And this is a story I tell them. I say, there are two, you know, characters in the story. One is Adam, and the other one is Eve.
Mm.
And starting with the story of Adam, Adam has a brilliant idea.
Mm.
And he is hesitant to share the idea because he feels this is, you know, a patent, potential patent. So what he does is, you know, he keeps the idea within himself.
Yes.
He takes a lot of effort to write the patent application, files it into the patent office, and then, you know, when the patent office reviews the patent, they just reject it, saying, you know, there's no novelty or inventiveness, and they will say, you know, this idea is rejected. And Eve has a similar idea. And what she does different from Adam is that she communicates with technical experts, she communicates with her peers, and really improves the idea significantly.
Yes.
And she brings in that element of novelty, inventiveness, you know, she would collect feedback, and she really, you know, from the, you know, initial idea, she really develops it further.
Hmm.
And again, they go through the same process, and Eve's idea is, you know, granted.
Yes.
Right. So the main difference is communication in, both the characters, right, between Adam and Eve. So that's just to, emphasize the power of, sharing your ideas. If you really want your ideas to, finally become a patent or innovative solution. And finally, if you want consumers to use it, you need to communicate it, right? So that, yeah, I think, if you really want innovation, I think communication is very essential.
In the era that we are living in at the meantime, and everybody is trying to be grouped behind a specific label or name, you will cause a lot of trouble right now because you said that Eve is sharing with the people, okay, and Adam is not sharing right now. A lot of people will come and say, okay, she's supporting Eve because she's a female leader. No,
That's right.
but I agree. No, I agree totally in what you are speaking about, regardless
Of the
of
gender, yeah.
yes.
I mean, for me, inclusiveness, I mean, for me, diversity is about diversity of thoughts. I mean, and I never
Yes.
relate diversity to gender. I mean, for me, it's about, making it inclusive for everyone and, bringing the diversity of thoughts. It could be, it could be gender, but it could be age, it could be, demographics, it could be anything. It's just that, we really need as the leaders to make sure that, yeah, it's an inclusive environment for all.
Is this one of the reasons why I heard about you, that you can calmly discuss crucial or hard topics with your team members? Is this why?
Not exactly. So, I mean, why I discuss, difficult topics calmly as a story, right? I mean, I learn a lot from leaders that I interact with.
Yes.
And sometimes you learn how to be, and sometimes you learn how not to be. Right? I mean, you learn the best practice, or you see them fail and, say, oh no, I don't want to repeat the failure. So I've seen leaders, I've seen a couple of them, especially, where they really create a lot of frustration, they're angry, and they just demotivate the team, and they focus so much on the problem,
Yes.
especially in the difficult situation or when it's crucial for them. And the result is they never come to a resolution. They never come to solving the problem. And I've also seen in contexts, corporate-wise, where they also, just to, for the period, they have a task force lead or a firefighting lead just to, calm down the fire. Then I kept asking, why do we have a different, task force lead? Why can't we be the leader who's also doing the firefighting, right? Why should we add fuel to the fire instead of, adding water to the fire and making it come? So, I mean, for me, it's been always like, again, have empathy, take a solution-oriented approach, and yeah, fix the problem than to just, create a mess in the difficult situation. And this has worked seamlessly for me. I mean, I never had to request a task force lead because I feel like, I should lead it. That's actually the main responsibility, I mean, that I see as a leader. We should be in the forefront, especially when you're having firefights,
What you are speaking about right now is truly wonderful, and it's aligned with some things that I spoke about before in previous episodes, not with a guest but by myself. When I used to say that it's sad that you see that people in leadership role, no matter if they are manager, senior manager, director, or above, and they are not really understanding the power that they have in their hands. You understand? So I always say leadership is about consistent change and improvement. This is leadership, as simple as that. And when you are speaking right now, it was breaking my heart, Rosemary, when I used to see what's called somebody, for example, on a high leadership role, and coming and saying, we have to attend this meeting today, and this meeting was this, for example, let's say group or council or committee. We are having it monthly or biweekly or whatever it is, and each time we're sitting there and we're not getting anything out of it, and all of this. Wait a second, wait a second. Why you are not interfering? You are all, I suppose, for example, you are in this leadership role to make a difference. And on top of all of this, if you are in another meeting, for example, with a committee, and this committee is having another people from leadership role, then you're supposed to have super extra superpower to make changes. So if you see, for example, you are moving in the wrong path, that, for example, the meeting is a waste of time, the structure of the meeting, the structure of anything, change it. If you are not doing it on this level and taking the initiative by yourself, then who will do it? So, for example, people at the bottom of the career ladder, Rosemary, usually say, I don't have enough authority and power to do something. Okay, now you have authority and power. And where's the change that you are trying to do all the time? So this is exactly aligned with this concept or idea that you took the initiative, you start saying, hey, why are we doing it in this way instead of this way? Why should we have another five fighting committee? I can, for example, take initiative here. And I salute you for this because not everybody is thinking like this, and I'm giving you credit for it. You understand?
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, as you rightly said, I mean, there's always a circle of concern and circle of influence, right? Yeah, I mean, and when you can change things, you change it, you know. Others, you accept it, you know, and stop cribbing about it or complaining about it, right? I mean, these are the two ways to deal with it.
So this is your philosophy in this regard. Yeah, yes. If you can change something, just change it. Just
yeah,
do it.
Just step up and change it, right? And yes. I mean, the philosophy behind this, yeah, it's just like, you know, precisely, you know, that I mentioned, right? Do you want to add fuel to the fire or do you want to add water to the fire?
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah.
Okay. In your career in general, as a whole, what is one challenging situation that you faced as a leader and how did you overcome it? I know that you shared previously a story. Now, I mean, when we're recording the episode, maybe you can share with us another story right now.
Okay. I mean, if I actually look back in my career, you know, overall professional life, the most challenging situation I had was when I was asked to set up the 13th R&D location for the business area in India. So we already have like 12 locations, which is functioning pretty well. You know, they have a good level of maturity and they are catering to the current business needs. Yeah. And the idea of starting up a new R&D location is to cater to the future business needs.
So you wanted to choose a new research and development or R&D place in India?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, we have it worldwide, 12 of them worldwide other than in India. So we have it, you know, in all the other continents. In India. We didn't have one in, you know, India precisely in Asia. And the fact is that there was an R&D in India 5 years before.
Yes.
But it closed down. So it was a failed story and that location was closed down in India. Okay, now I have to actually, you know, restart that newly, I mean, from scratch.
Yes.
And there are already the 12 locations. And the challenge for me was that I had very high resistance from some of the global leaders and of course all the other location leaders, because for them it's like, you know, oh yeah, now she's coming with a new location and yeah, it could be that, you know, one of the other transformations can kick in, right?
Yes, keep going. I like what I'm hearing right now because these stories, I like them. Yes, yeah.
It is very challenging because, you know, there's like super resistive environment. And I think in, you know, the conversation we had a few minutes before we started the podcast, I also mentioned like, I mean, when you have like everyone resisting you, you know, and, you know, some point there were also a couple of them asking me, are you crazy? You know, this is a closed location. Are you crazy to take this challenge? And I said, you know, I like challenges, you know, let's see what it brings, right? And yeah, I mean, how did I overcome this challenge was I spent a very good amount of time listening to all the stakeholders. So I listened to what
wait. So that the people are clear. Was the resistance in coming because they didn't want a new R&D or the center, or the resistance was coming because they didn't want specifically for this project India? Which one?
No, it was precise. The first one. Yeah. So they didn't want a new R&D location because we would have multiple projects that I would execute in that locations, you know, once the R&D is established. But we didn't have a distribution of projects to India yet. First thing was to set the foundation, right?
Yes.
And the resistance was that it was the 13th location, which means 12 locations are already existing. And every location wants to grow their own location further. Right? Yeah. They say, okay, and I have my location in Singapore, I have it in Timisoara, or I have it in, you know, Mexico. Why can I grow my own location? Why do you want to start a new, right? So they're trying for their own growth. And, you know, now comes, you know, a completely new R&D, right?
Yes.
That's a difficult
So I stopped you when you were speaking that you spent a considerable amount of time speaking with all stakeholders or listening.
Yes. I actually had a very detailed session with all the stakeholders involved, because some of the reasons why they resisted was purely speculative. Some things were because they didn't really even understand what the problem is, just that they saw someone else and now it just repeat, the resistance from the previous guy. So I also want to support their expectations. What are their pain points? Can I solve some of the pain points? Because finally, for me, it's about, how successful is my business area? I mean, I have a role as a location leader. I mean, tomorrow, when I'm also in a location leader, then they would start another R&D. For me, I think I should not, limit my view to just my location, right? It should always be like, what can I do for the greater good of the bigger organization that I work for? So, I mean, my view was always this, what can I do for business area? And then, of course, as a next step, what can I do for Continental, right? As a group, automotive, right? So, yeah, that was pretty challenging. And yeah, this is one way to, deal with it. But I also clearly gave them a vision, a mission, and a very clear, defined strategic plan. And we executed this strategic plan, with a lot of time that we invested, in executing those. And that's how, I actually overcame the challenge. But just to, make the story complete, this challenge was also the biggest opportunity I had in my career. And
Tell me more about it. Yes.
yes, this was a challenge which became my biggest achievement as well. So finally, at the end of setting up the foundation for the R&D,
Yes.
the operating model that I set for my location in India was scaled up to all the other 12 locations worldwide. So it became a blueprint for the other locations.
This is amazing. Yeah, really.
Yeah. So
And a good
that's why
success
it's my
story.
biggest achievement. Yes, it's a good success story. Of course, I always say there's an opportunity in a challenge. I mean, there is always an opportunity. So instead of resisting the challenge, it's always better to, see the opportunity and develop over the opportunity.
I really respect and appreciate your mindset so much, Rosemary, and what you are sharing right now with us. So, to summarize what you said right now in this regard, the R&D to build another R&D center in India, and then after this, you faced a huge resistance from some people from the management, and this resistance was coming mainly because they didn't think that there is another new one needed and better, for example, to fund the other 11 or 12 which are available. And what you did exactly is that you spent considerable amount of time listening to all stakeholders, and then you discovered that they are just most of their negative view about this step is based on some assumptions that they have. So you corrected these assumptions, you shared with them your inspiration about the project, your vision, your mission, where are we going to go, how are we going to do the things, how are we going to, for example, create the R&D, what's the ROI and all of this stuff. And then after this, you started winning some of them or step by step winning
Exactly.
them until you made it. And then after making it, after this, it became a great success to the extent that everybody else or the other R&D started saying, okay, we want to copy what worked here in our areas also, right?
Yes, you said it. You summarized it very well.
Okay, you know why I'm summarizing it? Because sometimes one of the questions that I used to get from the listeners was, "Can you, Muhammad, can you please try to put what's called some steps behind the stories in order that we are able to understand? Okay, step one, step two. The people, you understand what I mean? So
Understood, understood.
that's why that's why I try always to make this summary."
I did the same for my podcast, so I fully understand, because it's always important,
Yes.
you sometimes rephrase and just summarize it,
Yes.
and of course, repetition always helps.
Okay. Coming back to your team members, how do you make sure that your team is engaged, especially if you work remotely or if you have different team members in different locations around the world?
I mean, I was trying to answer this precise question a few years back, when I started leading remote teams.
Yes.
I've been leading like global teams, but the benefit we had that they were all still co-located teams, right? And when we
yes.
went into a remote setup, you were talking about individuals, you know, and then
yes.
you're actually making the connection between these individuals, you know, and across different time zones. Of course, you know, global teams are always having different time zones. And the best answer I found, because I was really, you know, trying to figure out and what should I do differently, because most of them thought, okay, you know, it's the same ecosystem, same setup. I mean, I've seen leaders who didn't do anything different. You know, they just went to, you know, use the teams, but they were doing exactly the same things, you know,
yeah.
as before. Then I thought, okay, you know, let me at least reflect on it. And the answer came to me as a part of an executive education session that I attended. And it says that, you know, usually the remote teams have five C's, which are called the five challenges.
Yes.
Yeah. And there are different versions of the five C's, you know, and the one which, you know, I made it for myself, which is then much more relatable, was one is communication. The second one is coordination. The third one is you need to have connection.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is creativity.
Yes.
And the fifth one is culture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I will tell you the process that ideally should be followed. Yeah. So we have to involve the team. I mean, one thing I've learned, you know, a little later in my career was to start to involve the team, you know, at a very early stage, because that would really give, you know, and that's one way you can also build trust easily.
Yes.
And you have to actually involve the team and understand which is the most highly rated challenge in your team among the five C's. Okay?
Yes.
And I'll explain shortly each of the C's. So communication means what and how you want to communicate. So you need to establish some, you know, rules and frameworks for enabling that. The second one is coordination, right? And it works perfectly in the, you know, agile approach, right?
Yeah.
With the agile methodology. And it's about, yeah, how do I actually report the progress? And how do I actually solve the dependencies that I have between the other team members, right? And then the third element is connection.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little more challenging in a remote context. Because, you know, it doesn't come if the leader hasn't taken any steps to ensure, you know, you have some possibility to socialize. Because the social connections happen usually before you enter the meeting, right?
Mm.
After the meeting, you know, some chit-chats or over a coffee or when you're going for lunch, right? All these social connections are established usually in that, you know, context.
Yes.
But when you're having a remote team, you have to actually take some effort, you know, as a leader to, you know, start with maybe ice-breaking sessions.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you know, encourage that chit-chat, right? Or, you know, sometimes just have virtual coffee with them. You know, no defined agenda or purpose, yeah? Just a virtual coffee where people just get to socialize, right? So those are things that, you know, are important, you know, that we miss during, you know, managing a remote team.
It's can I interrupt you 1 second?
Sure.
What you said in this point is very, very good, but I would like to add something to it. And this thing is because I saw it by experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very important also that the leader is trying to become creative in changing their ways of how to do something. One of the things which bore the people is if you are coming to them, for example, let us say you are trying to form more connection, so you are, especially with the people who are working remotely, so you are trying right now, for example, to come and speak, let us say, to start your discussion even in one-to-one with each one of them, with some chit-chat, private chit-chat to know about them. If you keep doing the same style that you start with a private chit-chat, and at the same time, most of the questions that you ask are the same each week if you meet your team member, then later on, don't be surprised if you get the word fine and not enough information that you can build upon a discussion.
You
just
nailed it.
Everything is fine.
You really nailed it. Exactly. So I also saw it from experience, right? I mean, when you actually start to ask, how are you? You know, over the time, when you actually have the remote team, everything is beautiful, everything is good, everything is perfect, right? Everything is fine. That's the answer. And yeah, you need to find, you know, constructive ways to engage them and that you observe quickly. I mean, if you are a leader who is, you know, really self-aware and, you know, self-reflective, and you really, you know, see what's happening, you will obviously, you know, see it from your second meeting. Yeah, my team is not engaged. Yeah,
Yes, I hope
they
we
need
reach
to
this
see.
level. I
Exactly.
mean that we reach this level of that we have people in managerial roles who are really having this level of self-awareness. Because believe it or not, again, not to brag, Rosemary, but if you're sitting in my place at the meantime, you see all the episode we are listening to experiences, of course, as a very great leader at the meantime, for example, at your company or previously. But at the same time, from my position here, I work with people from over 15 countries. I mean, as a consultant, advisor, and coach, all of this stuff. And it doesn't look that promising regarding, for example, the level of self-awareness. It doesn't look promising regarding, for example, how they are able to influence, how to use their power, how to do the right thing. No, it's far away from even scratching the surface of their potential, not even full potential. So when it comes to the topic of this point specifically, I hope that the people can even pause a little bit in order to ask themselves these questions. I remember a story. Now it's time to share a story. I remember a story. No, I'm just saying it's time because you were sharing a story before, so it's my
Yeah, I know. We were like sharing so many stories in this episode.
I remember in 2020 when the COVID hit the world. One thing which was weird, which happened, was that I started getting. I have part of my business is dedicated to business owners, so I work, for example, with founders, CEOs, business owners, solopreneurs, in order either to start their business or to scale their business. So one request, which if you are imagining 2020 again, you will understand my surprise, was that the request in this area that somebody wants to talk to me. To see the possibility of collaboration to start a business was very high in 2020 compared to any other thing. So I was this for me when I started getting these requests for discussions, I was wondering how the world is falling apart, everything is closed, so it's counterintuitive a little bit. And then this triggered me. I am a why guy. I like to understand always why something is happening. I just out of curiosity, you know. So I used to speak with the people, and then I ask at the end, "Hey, by the way, what triggered you exactly at the meantime to start to think about starting a business? From what you told me, you are established, you are working at a big corporation, you are in a high leadership role, your salary is very, very good. So do you see any risk? No, I don't see any risk at the meantime, and everything is fine. So why are you trying to start a business?" The common answer that I used to get was, "To be honest, Muhammad, when COVID hit this hard, it broke our normal daily routine, which we were doing consistently without thinking. Now you had the chance to change your daily style and routine and to start thinking carefully. And when you start thinking carefully, one of the questions that you ask is, are you moving in the right direction and what do you want later out of life?" And they used to say, "That's why we came right now, because we believe this is a great opportunity, not because of what's happening in the world, but because this happened as an interrupt." And this is one of the things that I was writing, for example, in one of my latest articles. In the last article or the last episode that I was also putting here in the podcast, I was saying three questions that you can ask your team members and can transform their performance and confidence. One, I was urging in this episode or the article, if anybody is reading it, to create interruptions on purpose for yourself. Because if you don't create interruptions, then you will always be moving on autopilot. And this is one of the reasons, Rosemary, by the way, we have an issue with self-awareness. Now, coming back to the topic of self-awareness, because if you are all the time moving, all the time, here's a meeting, here's a problem, let's finish it. Here, I have this one, that one, back-to-back meetings, all this stuff, teleconferences, then you will not pause, you will not reflect. And you will not even be thinking, am I doing the right thing, the wrong thing? Am I doing my team members a favor? Am I doing my company a favor? Am I even doing myself a favor? These questions are deep, but if you really take time to think about them and to answer them. But what I also saw is as a pattern is even if somebody happened that they were interrupted and they started asking these questions themselves, when they see that they are deep and they hard for the brain discourages them and tell them, okay, let's move to another topic.
And
that's why the topic, I'm adding my voice to yours, or this specifically on the point of self-awareness, I would love to see more managers and leaders, okay, having better self-awareness. A fun fact, I always meet with a manager or a leader, no matter if it's a new person or somebody old that I knew from the past, and I met them, no matter if they are also, let's say, for example, we're starting a work together, a project together, or, for example, we are just meeting to chit-chat, it never, ever happened that I asked them at the beginning and at the start and say, by the way, how is everything going at the business? And they answered me and said, yeah, we have issues and we know what these issues and we're searching or we're working on it. Or for example, we're searching for, no, it doesn't happen. What's usually happening is, everything is okay. Everything is fine. And, or the other thing, which is even worse, is what, everything is fine. And I hear this specifically sentence in automotive more than any part, other part is what, everything is not that good, but what we're going to do, automotive industry is always like this. I hate this sentence. I hate it. You understand? What does it mean? Automotive industry is always like this. What does it mean? For example, pharma is like this. IT is like, what does it mean? You understand? We as humans are creating the businesses, not the businesses are creating us. So if you are right now going there and you have issues, you have to have the awareness to understand what issues you have. And then the funny part is what, Rosemary, when I speak with these people later, and then, for example, I start probing them with some other questions, just as a chit chat, they always disappear. And then come after one meeting or discussion, or for example, we meet at an event, and then they say, by the way, you know, after we left the meeting the last time and you probed us with these questions, we started thinking, and I think right now I can tell you that I have issues in this and this and this. But at the beginning, they were not seeing them. And part of not seeing them is the lack of self-awareness. You understand? Really, the lack of also interrupt. This pattern interrupt is not allowing them to look around them, to start understanding what's going on. And this is a big issue. So I hope from the bottom of my heart that more people start taking the topic of the interrupt to build awareness, okay, and to make a reality check more seriously.
I fully resonate with what you're saying. I think it's really, really important that, you know, I mean, I always ask, let's say, often ask the question, why not, right? I mean, people are so used to, you know, doing something so repetitively.
Yes.
And the other thing which I also do is if any task or particularly an activity is so repetitive, then I actually try figure out one or the other way to automate it, you know, because then my process, my brain work is not needed there, right? So as you said, I think it's really important to make that interruptions, right?
And yes.
Yeah, get out of your comfort zone, grow into your learning zone, right?
Yes, yes. Coming back to your team members, if you felt that one of your employees suddenly became demotivated and his or her performance dropped, what do you usually do to handle this issue? I think this will be my final question to you today.
Okay. No, I'm still motivated. Okay, Mohammed, you can ask me more questions.
Thank you. Thank you as well.
So, I mean, if it's just one instant, right, then I would just let it go. But if it is repeated, and if I see it multiple times, then what I would do is to have an open conversation with the employee directly.
Yes.
You know, I'm not a leader who, you know, talks to others and, you know, tries to understand things from others. You know, just make a direct communication, right? You don't need to beat around the bush. Just call for the meeting and, you know, ask him or her directly, you know, what could be the issue that is troubling him. So it could be sometimes in some cases, you know, especially, you know, in the people that I've seen demotivated, a lot of times it's because of personal issues. And then they start to share this, you know, entire personal story with me. And, you know, I try a little bit from my side to support them also in their personal, you know, side, if they would like to. Not everyone, you know, would like to share the story, but if they would, you know, I would be more than willing also to, you know, help him or her.
Yes.
But sometimes it could also be like some intrinsic or extrinsic motivation. And yes, as a leader, it's just about, you know, listening to them, you know, asking them some leading questions to just figure out, you know, what's troubling them, you know, precisely,
Yes.
and then support them in their journey to, you know, motivate them back again. I have also a view there, like a lot of, I mean, we have this element of self-motivation, right? I mean, even if leaders say, or, you know, anyone else, you know, tries to motivate you, it doesn't happen because, you know, it should come from within. And that's something, you know, I would also leave
fully,
it.
Fully agree. Fully
Yeah.
agree. You can never imagine, for example, what's called when I'm this question I always get from sales leaders specifically, more than anybody else. How can I motivate my team? And I always say there is nothing called to motivate your team. Okay, all what you can do is to create the right processes and systems. Okay, that enable these teams to function in an atmosphere that makes them in their peak. But
exactly.
at the end, if you have 20 people working with you, let's say in your sales department, let's say, for example, 5 will super excel. The other 10 or 50 or something will be in the middle, and the rest will be, for example, the laggers, or, for example, the end there. And this depends on what, khalas, you made your point, you created the atmosphere and everything in place, but the rest is depending on the person. You cannot spend all your time as a leader trying to think all the time, okay, what can I come up with in order to motivate my employee?
Exactly. I mean, you can inspire them, you know, and you can be motivated yourself. But, you know, and as you said, you know, create an environment and, of course, you know, give them a listening ear and all the support, you know, you can. But, yeah, I mean, you can, you know, trigger your self-motivation. It's up to individuals to explore and, yeah, then leverage, yeah.
Yes. So this means that in general, if you saw that an incident that happened one time only or two times, you will just take it easy. If you saw that it's consistent, then you will go and speak with this person to try to get into the issue, to the core of the issue. And most of the time you said if the person wants to speak, it's something private, the core of the issue. And this is your realization about it. On the other hand, your opinion is you don't focus so much on trying to motivate someone if it's not a private issue, because in reality, you don't see that that this is your supposed to be your main goal to keep motivating them. You inspire them, yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do ensure that, you know, the extrinsic, you know, and the intrinsic factors as best as, you know, I can provide as a leader, you know, are there in place, you know. Sometimes it could be compensation, right? I mean, sometimes it could be a conflict with another team member. Sometimes he or she is not aligned to the goal, you know.
Do you know, according to research, and I also spoke about this in one of the episodes before and wrote about it in the article, according to research, what is the number one important factor which can make, for example, your team members demotivated or motivated is progress. If I am able to feel that I'm making progress or I'm not making progress. If I feel, for example, and progress here was divided into several parts, I spoke about it in detail there, but what I'm trying to say is what is progress itself. Progress is mainly two parts. Am I progressing myself towards what I want? If I know what I want, and put 10 lines, if I know what I want, this one. And the other part is regarding the company and the corporation. Are we doing something and we feel that we are progressing? For example, we have a project and we feel that we are going, or everything is standing against us in order that we are winning or moving forward. So nothing competes in the motivational part, personally or business-wise, with the feeling of the people making progress.
Yes, you're right. I mean, I say it as a, you know, three circles. It's purpose, mastery, and autonomy.
Yes.
Right. And if you try to set this at the beginning, you know, even starting the hiring process, right, just to make sure, you know, the purposes could be aligned, you know, you could have mastery and you could have autonomy.
Yes.
And then it's easier, because otherwise sometimes you yourself are not fitting into the organization, and then it's better you leave the organization, because you would never be motivated in that organization, because the purpose is not, you know, something that you are aligned with.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Rosemary, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you so much for answering these questions. I'm sure a lot of people who will hear this episode right now will benefit a lot from your insights and the things that you shared with us. And who knows, maybe, for example, we can come in the future and make, for example, another upgraded episode with another new questions, for example, about leadership and team performance. Or who knows, maybe even we can make it, for example, in a location directly video, directly face-to-face, instead of making it online like what we're doing it in the meantime. But mm-hmm. under any circumstances, I was honored and happy to speak to you here. Thank you for insights. And I really wish you all the best of luck in keeping inspiring the people and your next career steps.
Thank you so much, Mohammed. I mean, really, thank you so much for the opportunity, because it's, you know, it's a platform that I can see that if I could, you know, inspire even one or two leaders, right, additionally, that makes me happy. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. You told me this one off air. You told me that this is one of your goals, is to inspire even one person. This will be something great for you. And I believe that you got this done with this episode. And I'm really curious to see how the people will respond, for example, to all the things that you shared with them in this episode.
Sure, thank you. Looking so much. Forward as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosemary.